Oh, man, everything's wrong. My old lady done run off with the Iceman. That done my daughter run off with the Undertaker. And I'm about to die. I ain't got nobody to bury me.
So what can be worse?
Oh, boy. Here comes the Colonel.
All right, not funny, not funny at all. Welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our interview with Major General Scott Rice, and also Saul Sussman's going to stop in. He's putting forth again, this is the 20th anniversary of the Border Energy Forum, this time in San Antonio, Texas. He's going to tell us all about it. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set, rummage around the coin jar a little bit for today's query.
Well, to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Yes, we've thrown in the coin, so I see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. All right, oh spirit of the fountain, here's one that's right up your alley, huh? How many eyeballs does a four-eyed fish have? A four-eyed fish, huh? How many? Tell us that, oh spirit of the fountain.
I have given you my answer. And now you may tell the other.
Okay, O Spirit of the Fountain. How many eyeballs does a four-eyed fish have? Well, if you said four, you're wrong. The eyeballs in a four-eyed fish are only two. Mm-hmm, all right. Back to today's program. And so we're back with Major General Scott Rice. And it's nice that the government can get back to work. I know you and I were talking offline a little about that earlier, and I know that you're glad to get back to the business of the people.
Yeah, it is great. It's great to get back to the business that we're hired for and employed for, and really tasked for, to integrate and be a part of the active part of the community and the great things we do in our nation.
Well, I know the producers of the Homeland Security Technology Conference are highly honored to have you, and I wonder if maybe you can give us kind of a preview of what you want to present at the conference, and what you hope the takeaway will be. What are some of the things that you want to kind of drive home to the people that are going to be hearing you there?
Well, some of the things that we're talking about is the integration of technology and all those ideas and the way we serve people. Mm-hmm. And no greater place than innovation and technology than here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and right here at one of our great institutions, and that's through Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and the great think tank that's been developed up at Lincoln Labs. This organization at Lincoln Labs has done great things in bringing the right tools, the right technology at the right time to those that provide service, and specifically uniform service to our community, whether it be police, fire, emergency services, or the National Guard. The tools and the toys that they bring to the table make our job easier, make our job more effective, and so that we can do the right thing at the right time.
Well, what are some of the highlights of those tools? Can you, without breaching any national security, can you kind of give us an insight over some of the advances?
Well, one of the things that we look at is, as simple as it would seem, that just a map laid out on the table and a look at the map and trying to figure out where people are and what capability we have in what location, thinking about that in your mind is a great process that we go through on kind of getting our situational awareness, and as we call it, our SA of the area that we're operating in, and our SA of what forces we have out there. So as we look at the simple concept of laying a map out and trying to figure out where everybody is, if we could do that electronically, and if we could do that electronically with feedback from our people and our equipment and our trucks and our vehicles and all that capability that we put out into the community, if we can know electronically very rapidly, very quickly, where our people are and what they're doing, then that allows us to move our forces around, move our people and our capabilities around to be at the right place at the right time when we need them. That's the kind of technology, the electronic technology, the electronic systems that MIT and Lincoln Labs are working on building for us a situational awareness electronic map, so we can see our forces, see where they are and see what we're going to move them to, and so we can help meet the needs.
Did you have these tools at hand when we got that scare recently with the marathon bombing that happened? I imagine that threw everybody a big curve, and I can imagine there was a lot of running around and trying to make sure that everything was done right.
Absolutely, and we had pieces of the tools. And one of the challenges we have today is there's a tremendous amount of information, tremendous amount of products out there that can help us with our business. But to integrate them all and to have them present one picture, a picture that I can see, a picture that our emergency management and our Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency out of Framingham and the state police and the local law enforcement like Boston Police, if we all could see the same picture and the same information with all these tools, that's what we're trying to strive for. So we have pieces of it, but to get it integrated, that's what Lincoln Labs is really focusing in on with this type of conference, to get those wrapped up technologies to help us all out, not just one piece of the agency.
And it has to be a coordinated effort. I mean, what you do is vital, but, there's local law enforcement, there's the sheriff's office, there's the border patrol, the harbor patrol, and just about everything. All you guys have got to kind of hold hands and work together, don't you?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. Because some of these things and some of the situations that we look at, they require a lot of force. And frankly, we have a lot of capability in Massachusetts. But if we put that capability in the wrong place and it's not meeting the need of the current situation, we have to be able to see that and rapidly move our forces to the right place. So it really is about trying to have an awareness of what's happening and an awareness of where our people and our capability are, and then kind of move them around and so that we're meeting the needs.
Yeah, you've been a military man most of your career, I believe, but you've been trained in technology too, I believe, haven't you?
Oh yes, I've seen the full spectrum. From real basic tools, that you use to do your job, all the way to those advanced high-tech things. Flying the A-10 was an adventure, and we call that the old steam engine of air power. But boy, they've done some tremendous upgrades to just that aircraft to bring it into the 21st century, to give it all its digital capability, and all that stuff is very exciting, very rewarding, and fascinating. Fascinating on how we can put an innovative mind to a problem and solve it and do some wonderful things.
So we're still improving the A-10 Thunderbolt, too, is that right?
That's correct. Every platform, every weapon system, in fact, every piece of equipment we have, we're always thinking about how can we do it better, how can we do it more efficiently. And we're pretty lucky living here in Massachusetts, because in Massachusetts this is really a big center for innovation on how we can make things work better, work faster, and work more efficiently.
Yeah, you've flown some doozies, no doubt. The F-111 Aardvark when you were in England, I bet that was quite an experience, wasn't it?
Oh, that was fascinating. That plane really flew fast, and I look at it as I flew it in the 80s, it was pretty advanced for its time, because it had digital flight control systems on it, and that was pretty innovative for the time. A technology built in the late 60s, early 70s, that we were employing in the 80s, and I was stationed at Lake Neath at the time that we went and visited Gaddafi during El Dorado Canyon.
Oh, really?
In the late 80s, and so there were some interesting times I lived in.
Yeah, that was quite a. That was quite a time when with Gaddafi he did a little terrorism around the world, and so we decided to put terrorism on his front porch, if I remember correctly, or something like that. Wasn't that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. We put some bombs in his headquarters and bombs in his tent. So that was quite a wake up call for him, that he is not above the law and not out of reach.
Yeah, he kind of quieted down there for a while after that. Well, tell me, General, put on the meditation cap for just a minute. Look down the road, if you will. Where do you see the threats that we have to worry about? Where do you see you're going to have to be most prepared in the next 5 or 10 years or so as you shepherd the Massachusetts National Guard?
Well, we're looking at a number of things, but from areas around the world that we look at threats, we look at that homegrown, that dysfunctional person within our own society, within our own communities, mm-hmm. that's dissatisfied with something and wants to make a statement and wants to send a message. In a way, the Marathon bombing was a little bit of that, but
yeah.
these two men actually came from overseas with their ideology, and that's the other side of it, is the overseas threat, the overseas terrorisms that are one-off, that really want to use what the heart of that function is, that terrorism. They want to use that terror to drive an agenda forward. So it's pretty scary, and as we see, as the Boston Marathon showed us, is that weapons and destruction and news with a lot of people hurt, it's painful. It's hard for us to absorb that and figure out what to do and move on. So I'm very worried about that. But there's also that silent threat that these terrorism have in the background. And our networks and our cyber enterprise and all the connections that we do electronically on the computer and run our systems, there's a big threat there. So I'm very worried about the cyber threat we have, too. So...
Well, yeah,
hand in hand with the governor, and in fact, the governor has this Massachusetts task force, this Massachusetts Asset Security and Strategy Task Force,
yeah.
that he's put together to try to build greater connections between what wealth we have here in Massachusetts in education, industry, in all the innovative high-tech technology, and a backbone of that is all the military institutions, including the Guard. So it's a pretty exciting time to be part of that thought and that direction the governor has given us.
Yeah, that's good news, really. And of course, that sort of awareness is really important. I can imagine too, what you mentioned about the technology and the cyber warfare, that sort of thing, that could have devastating effect on the military because you rely so much on technology.
Oh, yes. It would be devastating. It would be devastating for every piece of our current society because we rely on technology so much, and the world of cyber and the cyber connections we have are critical to everything every one of us do and live and work at and live in every day.
And, of course, in protecting ourselves from these threats, it seems like occasionally the terrorists are winning because many times it involves a trade-off of privacy or a trade-off of some of our other liberties. We pride ourselves on our liberties, and yet there has to be, as the president has pointed out, a certain compromise between our liberties and our safety.
Yeah, absolutely, and it is a real challenge, and that's a challenge for our political leadership and our government leadership, and as we try to, as agency heads like myself, try to work a path where we maximize the amount of freedoms and liberties that we have, and yet at the same time we maximize the security of every one of our citizens, because we don't want to lose our freedoms, that's what we're fighting for, and yet at the same time we don't want to risk our lives of our loved ones that live and breathe around us.
Yeah, so very true. Well, what is one big thought that you want people to take away after they come and meet you and hear you at the conference? What is one important message you would like to deliver home and have them take away from the conference after they hear you?
Well, what I'm trying to instill in all these people is instill a little bit of greater idea on hope. And hope for the future. Hope that we, standing on the ideals of how our forefathers created this country and what it stood for in fighting for freedom and pursuit of happiness and liberty, that those ideals are still achievable even today. Even in today's world of terrorism, of budget pressures, and trying to do more with less, one of the things that we have that we have capitalized on over the years is the innovative minds that we all have and the ability for us to think about a problem, move forward, and still maintain the freedoms we hold dear, and yet at the same time provide a secure and safe place for our kids to grow up and evolve into their own world.
Yeah, that's a great message, General Rice. I really have to say bravo and hear, hear, and thank you very much. That was very good. One thing more before we get out of here. You've obviously, during the course of your life, have had important mentors, and I know that you mentor a lot of people, and, of course, your servicemen that look up to you and respect you and that sort of thing. How about a word of wisdom, a life lesson that you might pass on to a grandson or to a soldier or someone who's important to you? Give us a word of wisdom, a word to live by.
One thing my father instilled in me, which is hold true today, is he said, your word is everything, and you live and breathe on your integrity, and never lose sight of your integrity. So as I look to that and say, how can I apply that moral or that value to what I do? And I look at every single person I meet, and not only am I proud and enthused about what, you know, say all the guardsmen, 9,000 of them that we have in our state, in our Commonwealth. But as I look in each and every one, I know that there's good in every one of them and that they have value to our organization and our society. And so I use that integrity that my father instilled in me to say, how can I help them become better at doing their job and doing their service to our country and our Commonwealth? And that's what I take away.
All right. Major General L. Scott Rice, Adjutant General of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, you are an inspiration and certainly a credit to the service. It's such an honor to know you, and we are looking forward to seeing you at the Homeland Security Technology Conference in Boston, the middle of November. Thank you so much for being with us.
Colonel, thank you very much for your time as well.
Well, I have on the line Saul Sussman. He is the guy that is largely responsible for the Border Energy Forum that takes place in like 10 border states along the United States-Mexico border, and this time it's in San Antonio. And we've tracked him down. He wasn't easy to get because the forum, we got to him just before the forum was to be produced. Welcome to the program, Saul.
Thank you. It's very good to hear from you.
Now, I understand this is a spearheaded effort by the Texas General Land Commission, and you've been at it for quite some time. And although you're sort of retired from the commission, you still keep your hands in what's going on with the Border Energy Forum. Tell us about the forum. Why was it devised, and what's been going on with it, and just fill us in.
Right. Well, the forum started 20 years ago. It started in 1994. And we started it at the Texas General Land Office, working with the four Mexican states that border Texas. And very soon after that, we just thought it was important to know who was involved cross border. That, you know, you couldn't not know who was working on energy issues in the state capitals across the border, or not know if certain things came up with energy issues, related air quality issues, etc., because a lot of that affects cross border trade and commerce and the environment. So we started the forum thinking it would be a very small thing that we'd do for a couple years. And very soon the states to our west wanted to join in, and we changed the name from Texas-Mexico Border Energy Forum very early on to U.S.-Mexico Border Energy Forum. And in 20 years, we've now met in each of the 10 U.S. and Mexican border states at least once, and we've met in Texas more than any other state. Our habit is to alternate each year between a city in the southwest of the United States and a city in northern Mexico.
So am I correct in thinking then that there are four U.S. States, that would be California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, and then six Mexican states. Is that right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And we actually attract people as well from Mexico City and Washington, D.C., and some of the other states that aren't specifically on the border. This year, we actually have support, too, from the Canadian government because they're very interested in what's going on here, again, for trade and commerce and also as a good neighbor.
And maybe because the NAFTA highway goes all the way from Mexico all the way up into Canada, does that have something to do with it, too?
True. That's true. And early on, you know, we did kind of a neat thing in our third year. So we go back quite a ways. But in our third year, we were meeting for the first time in Monterrey, Mexico. And it happened to be Monterrey's 400th birthday.
Oh, wow.
And so we started a scrapbook in Winnipeg, Canada,
mm-hmm.
and traveled it down the central highway, mostly on I-35. And it was carried all the way in alternative fuels vehicles. It was passed off.
Oh, wow.
You know, as if in a relay race from one city to another. And each city carried it in an electric vehicle or a propane vehicle or a natural gas vehicle and sent their good wishes to Monterrey. And that arrived in 1996. So we go back a ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess part of the energy is so interesting for Mexico because of the I'm probably mispronouncing that, but the construction manufacturing areas south of the border that do a lot of manufacturing for American companies. Is that part of the drive?
That's right. Well, we're interested in the best use of energy possible on both sides of the border. So certainly there's been work to encourage energy efficiency in industrial production and in industrial buildings, like many of the warehouse-like buildings that house maquiladoras.
Well, then, this is a forum, so I want to know what goes on there. I mean, you guys sit around a big table and everybody talk about things, and I guess you have some conferences and stuff. Do you have exhibits, too? I mean, are there suppliers that exhibit?
We don't. We try not to have a trade show atmosphere. We try to be very much a dialogue and a place for people to have a conversation, start new business partnerships. We generally get between 250 and 350 people every year, which is way more than we originally expected. We have a good crowd, a good mix between people from Mexico and people from the United States, so it's very easy to encourage new partnerships. You can check our website, borderenergyforum.org.
All right, Saul Sussman, the driving force behind the Border Energy Forum, the 20th anniversary going on this year in San Antonio, Texas. Thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
This program, we depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Let's innovate. Let's innovate together. Don't just make it within the agency. Don't make it just within your communities. Let's do this as a whole community concept. And if we're willing to do this together, think of the strides that we can take to help the citizens within our communities and ultimately the citizens globally. So that's what I want to say. Let's innovate. Hi, my name is Desiree Mattel Anderson. I'm the Chief Innovation Advisor at FEMA.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
You live tomorrow, 'cause you know it will be there. I am waiting for you. I am seeds for you.